how do human beings deal with complexity? One way is to raise the level of abstraction. That means seeing a problem as an example of a general class of problems. And one way to do that is to write code that is clear, short, and fast. That doesn't happen all the time, but it's beautiful when it does. So says IBM fellow Grady Booch, who speaks in this episode of Celebrate Software Research about the relationship between abstraction and the search for beauty in software design patterns.
Hi, this is Grady Booch. I'm an IBM fellow working for the IBM Watson Laboratories. Even though I'm an uber geek, it is the case I know that software development is ultimately a human experience. There's a quote by a gentleman named Brian Andreas, and it goes, "She said she usually cried at least once each day, not because she was sad, but because the world was so beautiful and life was so short." Now, this is kind of weird, me being a geeky kind of person, but ultimately what we do in our software systems is that which contributes to and is impacted by the human spirit. Every system has an architecture, although most architectures are accidental, not intentional, and there's a loss of information from design to implementation. That's why I'm so fascinated by the human element, because we see the same stories over and over again in software development projects where you have this really delightful tension between problems of design, problems of organization, which live on the cusp of the technical and the human. There's a group called the Hillside Group that I and Kent Beck formed some years ago, and it became the genesis of an organization that really is focused upon the authoring and dissemination and cultivation of design patterns. Patterns allow us to build a level of abstraction, a unit of abstraction, whereby we can name, describe, reason about systems that are a higher level of abstraction than the individual lines of code or the classes themselves. We see this in software in terms of our languages, our tools, our methodologies. So we see a movement from algorithmic abstractions to object-oriented abstractions, and now to abstractions that address cross-cutting concerns. Design patterns represent a really fundamental and inevitable and important step up in addressing higher levels of abstraction. In my mind, the notion of patterns is perhaps the most important development in software engineering in the last 20 or so years. There are three dimensions of software that really fascinate me. One is the very concrete. Building software systems that manipulate things in the world is amazingly cool because we have this transform from what is pure thought into pure action, and I can't think of any other discipline, any other media that does that. The second is I am a lover of beauty and elegance in software, and one of the things that I've come to understand as I work on this handbook of software architecture is that there is a fierce beauty in many of the large software systems that we find. The third element of it is purely metaphysical, that although I'm not trained in high-energy physics, one of my heroes is Richard Feynman and all the work he has done. And as I look at what that community deals with, it's a really curious opposite of what we have in software, because high-energy physics, down to quantum thermodynamics and the like, is what Feynman was particularly working on. Is basically taking complexity, very, very complex things, and trying to tease out of it the simplicity from it. In software systems, I have the privilege of doing the reverse. I take things that are incredibly complex, and I help organizations squeeze them down so that they are not only simple, they actually disappear. The best software is invisible to the world. As one addendum on that, these days I spend a lot of time in virtual worlds, Second Life mostly, and there's something really quite interesting to consider about building those worlds in software and just how real can they be. And frankly, it raises all sorts of interesting questions about the meaning of reality here. If you want to get really interesting, there's an economic aspect of this. Issues of energy costs and energy scarcity are such that this notion of projecting one through a virtual world, which is far low cost in terms of energy, is a very viable concept. There was an interesting time in the 90s when you saw this shift happening in software development. The web was beginning to ferment. People were building larger and larger software systems, and the traditional languages we had, Fortran, COBOL, C, were looking pretty creaky. And you know, the work that Tom DeMarco and Ed Yordan and Larry Constantine did, Michael Jackson, the guy from the UK, these guys had all generated approaches for dealing with complexity, with algorithmic abstractions in those traditional languages. But the winds were shifting in a different direction. So the ideas of abstract data types from Mary Shaw and David Garland, the ideas of object orientation as we see in Simula, eventually morphing itself into Smalltalk, to C with classes, to C++, this was all in the atmosphere. But I was heavily influenced by Ada and the dealing with really, really massively large software systems and how does one deal with the organization and design therein. That led me to the work of the abstract data type folks and Simula and others, and thus was born the Booch method. This was in the cauldron of lots of competing methods. There were a few dozen around that time. But ultimately, being a great believer in the value of a representative government that's backed by capitalism to evolve the good enough ideas, the Booch method, OMT, and Objectory were the ones that the marketplace deemed as, yea, verily, these are useful to us. So the method wars raged on. This is when Rational was, you know, really taking the lead in the marketplace with Rose. And we decided the best way to grow the market is to wage peace. Knowing that these three methods were in favor, we hired Jim Rumbani, we bought Ivar Jacobson's company, and Jimmy Bear and I were set out on task to unify our methods and thus the name Unified Modeling Language. In retrospect, I am delighted across three dimensions. The first is I'm really grateful for having the opportunity and context that Rational provided to work unencumbered to do the right thing, and Rational truly did let us do the right thing. The second is I'm utterly amazed that we brought together Microsoft, IBM, HP, Oracle, Texas Instruments, you name it, that all agreed to join us in the submission for the UML, and I can't think of another standard, any standard whatsoever, for which so many diverse and competing companies have come together and said, yes, this is a good thing. The third dimension upon which I'm delighted is the fact that UML plain works. As I go about the world, I see the UML used in pacemakers, deep space probes, nuclear power plants, payroll systems, and so the spread of the UML has delighted and astounded and humbled me. I'll get literary. It is the best of times, it is the worst of times. It is the best of times because no matter what future one can envision, it relies upon software and methods and tools that have yet to be invented. And so I urge that community to dream bigger than they even imagined they could dream, because I think many of them flatly have a failure of imagination. That's a sad limitation. I say it's the worst of times because economically it's kind of, you know, a crunch right now for all the worldwide economies. And yet software is a domain that, you know, doesn't consume a lot of energy. Its transport costs are pretty small. Its replication costs are zero. And its ability to impact, it's me sitting here in my place in Colorado, I can impact the lives of people far, far distant from me in gentle, good ways because of the software work I do. But we're just at the beginning.
IBM. Celebrate. Software. Research.